This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. When it comes to political corruption, nothing surprises us anymore. We've seen the selling of a Senate seat and also the keeping of hundreds of thousands of dollars in bribe money in a congressman's freezer. Political malfeasance, it grabs headlines, and it appears that political corruption is out of control and it's everywhere. But is it that way really? And exactly how corrupt is Texas? A report card from the Center for Public Integrity gives us a dismal D+ in terms of our risk for corruption. And last month, it gave us a big fat F for our judicial financial disclosures. We want to know what you think. How much confidence do you have in the honesty of our political leaders? Call in at 210-614-8980. You could also email us at thesource@tpr.org. We're joined this half hour with Dr. James Henson. He is the director for the Texas Politics Project and a professor at the University of Texas at Austin. And Gordon Witkin, he is the managing editor at the Center for Public Integrity. Welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
Gordon, at the Center for Public Integrity, you gave Texas some awful grades, but I don't see a lot of big headlines for Texas corruption. So tell me about this report and why you gave us this grade.
Well, the first thing I'd mention is that our project did not attempt to measure corruption cases. It attempted to measure the risk of corruption and the systems in place in different states.
So that just means our guys are better at it. They haven't been caught, right?
Well, I wouldn't put it quite that way. But one of the reasons we did not measure cases of corruption is because in places that don't have a lot of systems in place to ferret out corruption, you may not get a lot of cases. So simply measuring cases may be a specious way of looking at what the risk of corruption is in a particular place.
Okay, so tell us more about the D+. Why did you give us that?
Well, we found that, first of all, let me say that nobody got an A, and there were 8 Fs. So Texas actually, had a number of folks that were behind it, and Texas actually scored about 27th in the rankings. But the grade was D+. We found that there was a rather cumbersome system for ferreting out public information and for public information requests in Texas, that campaign contributions to candidates and political committees were essentially unlimited except for judicial elections. That asset disclosure forms for state officers had a lot of unanswered questions, that the disclosure forms also were fairly vague in terms of listing, for instance, the quantities of stocks that state elected and high-level appointed officials held, that attorneys or consultants who served in public office were able to avoid listing clients of their firms, that the state's revolving door policies allowed legislators in particular to move very quickly, even in days, from being lawmakers to lobbyists, that lobby registration and spending reports were fairly vague, and that the Texas Ethics Commission was not particularly effective, did not have a lot of teeth, and a provision in state law requiring that 6 of 8 board members of the Ethics Commission to agree for the commission to open an investigation on its own set an awfully high bar to look into accusations of malfeasance. These were among the areas where Texas scored poorly. Didn't score poorly everywhere. Internal auditing in Texas we found to be strong. Procurement policies fairly rigid as well.
Wow, Gordon, to say that Texas is smack dab in the middle of the pack of states as far as risk for public corruption goes, who was dead last? Do you know?
Yes. Georgia was dead last. 49th was South Dakota. 48th, Wyoming. And 47th, Virginia. Our project came out in early 2012, and as you might expect, we got a fair amount of pushback from those who scored poorly. And Virginia We were scoffed at and told that in Virginia there was a tradition of above board political acts, the so-called Virginia Way, that Virginia was marked by politics run by gentlemen who would not do anything unethical. And we've gotten an awful lot of attention just in the last few weeks for what we said about Virginia in light of the problems that their governor, Bob McDonnell, is having.
Right. Jim Henson over at UT Austin with the Texas Politics Project. We look at some of these stories that we see across the nation. Chris Christie is being investigated. Nothing's been proven. It's just a lot of allegations right now. We have the indictment of McDonald in Virginia. When was the last time Texas has seen a really huge headline-grabbing political corruption scandal that went all the way to the governor's mansion?
Well, you know, something that's gone all the way to the governor's mansion has actually not happened for quite a while, really, you know, early in the century. And, I think it's actually been a while since, you know, a governor has really been caught red-handed. They came pretty close in the early 70s with the Sharpstown scandal, and that cost a lot of, you know, up-and-coming politicians their jobs and triggered a lot of turnover. But, you know, it's been, you know, almost a century since we've had a really, you know, solid scandal that went all the way to the top. I think, you know, the kind of things that you're talking to your other guests about are much more typical, and that is, you know, the kind of foot-dragging on ethics reform that Texas has seen that, you know, keeps it in the middle of the pack. You know, he was talking about the Texas Ethics Commission, and Gordon is, you know, couldn't be more right about just how toothless the Texas Ethics Commission is. And, you know, most attempts to make the Ethics Commission, a little more effectual have, you know, fallen by the wayside and been pretty unsuccessful. It's very hard to get ethics reform in Texas.
Yeah, and it's tough because the people in charge of politics aren't going to be preordained towards trying to make politics tougher, right?
Right. Texas is not alone in this. I mean, typically what you have is a certain amount of, you know, fox guarding the hen house here in terms of trying to pass ethics legislation. I mean, you know, I think it's interesting that you would point out that Texas is kind of in the middle of the pack, and this is one of those areas where Texas has, you know, a complicated and mixed history in which, you know, on one hand, Texas has a constitution that provides for a citizen legislature, quote unquote. Remember here, the legislature
sure.
only meets every other year for 140 days.
Right. So, Jim, we're going to continue this conversation. We've got to take a quick break. I want to talk about some of the near scandals that have touched Texas, not just there's local scandals, political scandals across the state. We're going to be talking about, we want to hear what our listeners have to say. Do you think Texas politicians were just squeaky clean, nice, honest folk? Give us a call, 614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be right back.
Good afternoon. It's 3:15. I'm Steve Short with a look at San Antonio traffic. There's a report of an accident on the far northwest side on westbound I-10 at Dominion Drive. Also, watch out for a stalled vehicle on westbound Loop 410 at Babcock. It's on the left shoulder. It's going to remain cloudy this afternoon with a high around 39. It'll be mostly cloudy tonight with a low around 27 and sunny on Wednesday with a high near 48. Currently, it's cloudy and 38 degrees in San Antonio.
Day sponsorship is a unique way for Texas Public Radio members to acknowledge a special occasion for a friend or a loved one while supporting their public radio station. For a donation of $250, your personal message will air 5 different times on the specific day of your choosing. Learn more about the program online at tpr.org.
Listening to The Source on KSTX, I'm David Martin Davies. Former governor of Virginia, Bob McDonald, he was indicted last week. Former mayor of New Orleans, Ray Nagin, he's in court now, 21 counts of corruption he's facing. Just last year, former Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr., he had to resign from Congress because of a corruption scandal. In Texas, you know, we are finding out that there are some risk of corruption, but we haven't seen any major political corruption scandals, not in quite some time. And let me ask you that, Jim. This is something that our other guest, Gordon, alluded to. We really don't have mechanisms in place in Texas kind of to ferret out that corruption or to pursue it, especially now that Texas Governor Rick Perry has eliminated funding for the only office in the state that investigates and prosecutes political corruption cases. So what's up with that?
Right. I mean, there was, you know, a political dispute, and it's been, you know, longstanding and had a lot of chapters. The Travis County Public, you know, the Public Integrity Unit is located in Travis County and under the jurisdiction of the DA, who got caught up in her own problem when she was arrested for drunk driving and during the last session or right around there. And the governor took that as an opportunity to, you know, essentially veto the bill that provided funding for the Public Integrity Unit. Now, Travis County has found some of the money for that. But the Public Integrity Unit has always been a kind of imperfect solution to the problem in Texas, and kind of out there on their own, if you will. As you said, the Ethics Commission doesn't have much enforcement power, and the oversight exercised by the legislature has been unenthusiastic, shall we say.
Right. We're talking to Jim Henson. He is the director of the Texas Politics Project, professor at the University of Texas, and Gordon Witkin. He's the managing editor for the Center for Public Integrity. We're talking about politics and corruption. We want to hear what you have to say. Call in if you've got a take on politics and corruption, particularly in Texas. The number is 614-8980. You could also email your questions to thesource@tpr.org. So, Gordon Witkin, when you look at Texas and you see that it is such a solid red state, and the House is being controlled by the Republicans, and you know the governor's mansion controlled by the Republican. When you look at New Jersey, you see how it's split and how the legislative body is being so active in investigating Chris Christie, the governor there. You see that doesn't happen when you've got the one party controlling all of the mechanisms. Is that right?
Well, I mean, it can be right, and politics being what it is, it may in fact be right. I mean, interestingly, what we have found as well is that there were places, and New Jersey is the prime example, where a history of scandal, a rich history of scandal, actually was served the purpose of shaming the legislator into reforms. In New Jersey, following the scandals of the McGreevy administration 2004-2005, we found that there were a fairly robust an aggressive set of reforms enacted in New Jersey. And so disclosure rules in New Jersey, gift rules, et cetera, we found to be some of the strongest. We found some of the same phenomena in Illinois, where something like half of the last eight governors have gone to prison. But again, that as a result of that, there were some fairly intensive reforms enacted.
Yeah, that's a great cycle. You have the blow up, the headlines, the people demanding action, and then you have the reforms, and we'll see how well those reforms actually take care of business. We see that sometimes it actually does. But Jim Henson, I understand that you've done some research and you know about the perception bias when it comes to partisan politics, that people seem to think that their party is not corrupt.
Well, I mean, you know, we have, you know, a mixture of direct and indirect kind of indications of this. I think, you know, directly, I mean, it's kind of hard to go out and poll people on, you know, do you think we should have this reform or that reform? Because you tend to get lots of public support for that, you know, absent some other stimulus, as you and Gordon were talking about, you know, tends not to go anywhere. But one of the things we have been asking regularly is we ask a most important problem battery, where we ask Texans, what do you think is the most important problem facing the state? What do you think is the most important problem facing the nation? We have an item that it invites people to choose political corruption and leadership. And what you see is that, given the array right now, as you say, Texas is dominated by Republican leadership, yet the nation is headed by a Democratic president, that when you ask people about corruption in the state as a problem, Democrats see it as a big problem, Republicans much less so, And when you look at the people that see corruption as a problem at the national level, Republicans see it as a big problem, Democrats not as much. And you have to put a little bit of an asterisk on that as Washington, D.C. has gotten more dysfunctional in the last year, year and a half. That's changed a little bit, but you still, you know, the takeaway from that is that the perception of corruption is colored by partisanship. And, you know, that becomes a problem in trying to do anything about it.
Well, looking at the governorship of Rick Perry, you can name many things that would raise questions and should have some investigation should have taken place. You know, we have this, and there was in CPRIT, which was the cancer fund, and about whether or not there was some politics involved in allowing money that was supposed to go towards cancer research going to political friends. So we always hear about cronyism with Governor Rick Perry. There was also his real estate deal in Horseshoe Bay, which was a great real estate deal. He made a lot of money off of that, and people are wondering if he is also a real estate genius in addition to be a great politician. There's just the whole Texas Enterprise Fund and the connections to people who donate to his campaign. There was questions about the Texas Youth Commission, the sex scandal in 2007, whether or not the governor's mansion had tip-offs to what was going on out there and that they had covered up or inhibited the investigation. No follow-up on there. If you go back and look at some of the great reporting done by the Dallas Morning News on that, it's astonishing that there wasn't more of a follow-up and investigation, Jim.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a lot of ways you use the word that comes up a lot in talking about the governor's tenure, cronyism, and I think in many ways it's just been the dog that hasn't barked in any significant way in terms of consequences. I think that, you know, the national press and the state press tried, you know, very hard to uncover something solid that would work in all those cases, and there seems to have been a pattern of going right up to the brink in some of these ways, but the governor being able to, you know, not basically have responsibility for those things put right at its door. And I think it points to something that I think that Gordon's organization is getting at, that, you know, some of the internal checks on the kind of processes that are involved in something like CPRIT and something like the Enterprise Fund are just not there. And it was one of the ways that Rick Perry turned himself into one of the more influential governors in the state's history.
Sure, and particularly with UT and A&M, what's going on there with the Board of Regents. You wanted to add to that, Gordon?
Yeah, I mean, I was also going to make a couple other points, which is that some of the things you've cited, as well as the problems that Governor Christie's having in New Jersey, I think there is some distinction to be drawn between cronyism and political muscle, if you will, and what I'd think of as capital C corruption, which is, you know, stealing or, you know, money exchanging hands for an explicit quid pro quo, etc. I mean, we may find differently in New Jersey, but I would put Governor Christie's problems there more into the category of traditional Midwest, Northeast hardball politics than corruption per se. The other thing that is an often repeated bromide here in D.C., but I think applies elsewhere, is that sometimes when you look at how things run, that what's shocking is not what's illegal. What's shocking is what's still legal.
Sure. Absolutely. In regard to that Chris Christie comment you made, certainly if he was not seen as a front runner for the Republican nomination for president, that this probably would not have ever became a national headline. But let me ask you, Gordon, we had a call from a caller, didn't want to go on the air, but they said that, is there a problem with the media not doing the investigative work that we used to be able to do? And of course, the media has seen a lot of cuts.
Well, I think that's an important point. One of the reasons we embarked on our project and that we were able to get support for the project is that of all the myriad of problems that journalism has had in recent years and the crisis of trying to relocate a business model that works in journalism. A lot of areas of coverage have been cut back, but I would venture to say nothing's been cut back as much as state government coverage, state house coverage, and state legislative coverage. I mean, the American Journalism Review actually did a survey several years back and found that in state capital after state capital, coverage had just been decimated. The number of reporters and the number of newspapers who had full-time folks in the state capital or full-time folks covering the state legislature had just been massively slashed.
So we heard about the pattern of explosive scandal and then reform. Is there any way that we can get reform without having to go through the explosive scandal? What would be some easy things that you think that we could probably do in Texas, Gordon? And then, Jim, I want to hear your ideas about this are. So, Gordon, go ahead.
Well, I think, you know, we found in our work that there was some benefit in doing this as a ranking under a sort of name and shame umbrella. There are six or seven states that have enacted reforms that we think are at least in part due to the work we did. I think, but there's sort of a chicken and egg problem here. I mean, I think with state house coverage so diminished, it's a little harder to get regular folks concerned about some of these issues, but absent a higher level of concern, you're not going to see a lot of change. I mean, and I think maybe the dilemma was illustrated in Austin, you know, clearly from the 2013 session where there was a major ethics package and something passed, but it was rather dramatically watered down before it got through.
And Jim, anything real quickly that you can think of that we can probably get?
Well, I mean, I think the opportunity lies, you know, to be a little more elitist about it when there are political conflicts you can take advantage of. I mean, I think the governor vetoed a disclosure bill that would have uncovered dark money, you know, put into campaigns without disclosure. And I think, frankly, there are enough business groups that feel competition from these large individual dark donors that are upsetting the apple cart a little bit. And I think that's a good place to start, and they should try that again.
All right. Talking about political corruption in Texas, and I want to thank both our guests, Jim Henson from the University of Texas at Austin, a professor of political science there, the Texas Politics Project he's the director of, and Gordon Witkin. He is a managing editor for the Center for Public Integrity.